Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. Joining us today from Memphis, Tennessee, is our Warriors man on the beat, Nick Friedel. Or will this be Andrew Hahn? Let's see if you can tell at home.
Nick? B, how's it going?
I wonder if that was Andrew Hahn. Well, I guess we'll find out. Joining us from Portland, Oregon, where he is working on covering the Blazers instead of his normal OKC Thunder beat. Actually, the irony is the Thunder are in Memphis with Nick, and Royce is in Portland where the Nets play the Blazers tonight. It's Royce Young. Royce, hope the newborn is doing well. Thank you for joining us.
The newborn is doing terrifically well, Brian, and I am happy in Portland. Blazers are a fun team to be around.
Portland is a great town, and especially when the sun is out. So I'm in L.A. where today I had a very robust, to use a favorite NBA word, robust conversation with Jason Kidd and Scottie Pippen, both on the jump and off the jump behind the scenes, about where the MVP race is going. And I hope I'm not outing anybody, but somebody reached out to do a straw poll to me yesterday, because the tomorrow the Bucks are hosting the Rockets, and so it's a perfect time to do a straw poll. And I've done these over the years where they basically reach out to likely MVP voters. You give a vote, you hope you can get a representative sample, and you basically release a poll like, this guy's ahead or not. And guys, I could not give an answer. I was probably in Harden's, I was pro Harden at All-Star break. Not that I think you should have your mind made up by then. I am no longer there, despite the fact that Harden has been great the last week or so. Nick, if you were asked in that poll right now, would you have an answer?
I lean Harden right now. I would give him my vote, of which I do not have this year, but Giannis is going to win one.
How do you know? The votes haven't gone out yet.
Oh, well, so maybe I do have one. You never know.
Yeah.
But okay. Giannis is going to win one. It might happen this year. It's a very close race. But for me, Harden kept that team alive and kicking for too long of a stretch. The numbers he's putting up and continues to put up are incredible. And I would give him the benefit of the doubt, knowing what he already accomplished last year and knowing that without him on that team, as great as Giannis has been and will continue to be, Harden to me is a cut above at the moment.
Royce, if you had to make a vote today in a straw poll, non-binding, it would be?
I think I would vote. I think I would vote Giannis, and it's like you're 51-49. I feel like one way or the other.
Yeah, it's kind of not really fair. This is what happens. It's kind of not fair to like knock the other guy.
I know, and that's what it always feels like, right? Everybody just assumes you just hate the other guy, or you've got some issue with the other guy, or whatever it might mean. But what it is, Brian, it's like it's such a contextual conversation about MVP, and it's very contrasting, right? So like Harden's got kind of a lot more of the narrative, I think, and you've talked a lot about how MVPs are built on narratives, and Harden really adds to that, maybe the fact that he won it last year, which maybe there's a little element of voter fatigue, but he's got the like Nick just said, you know, with what the Rockets went through, with the immense scoring, and just kind of what we visualize, I think, an MVP to be, which is putting the team on your back, metaphorically speaking. James Harden has kind of done that. Giannis has really kind of just been doing that. But what separates me is, and I think Tom Haverstraw might have been the one that tweeted this, or somebody did. I don't remember. I wish I could remember who to give credit for. But it was about double-digit wins this year. And the Bucks are so far and beyond every other team in the NBA in double-digit wins. And so it's like one of these things. It's kind of similar a little bit to the Westbrook-Harden debate and what we've had with some past MVP debates, which is, like, do you want the dominant team, the team that's just just rolling over everybody and has the best net rating in the league, and Giannis sits fourth quarters and he doesn't need these like MVP Heisman moments? Or do you want the guy that's like putting the team on his back in crunch time and winning thing? And so I don't really know which one.
Right. So here's the stat from Haverstraw. So this is number of wins by 10 plus points. The Bucks have 42.
It's insane.
42 wins by 10 plus points.
Out of their 55. They've won 55 total games.
Right. So second place is tied. By the way, the one team makes sense, Golden State, Knicks team. The other team that was tied with 29, which so 13 fewer, is the Jazz. And the only thing I can think about that is that sometimes teams roll into Salt Lake on a back-to-back, or they're just not having a good night, and they just fold up shop because, you know, the Jazz kick teams' butts at home, although they have been losing some games recently that, in my opinion, I had them chalked up to wins. But and then Toronto has 28. So Toronto at 28, Warriors and Jazz at 29, Milwaukee at 42. So you can't have a game-changing, you know, three-pointer or three-point play if you're already out of the game in, you know what, three-quarters of your wins so far, Nick. Yeah.
I understand the statistics, and the numbers can, especially in this argument, guys, they can go whatever direction you want to make them. To me, Harden's importance to that team in those stretches was just a little bit more important than Giannis has been. And Giannis is incredibly important. I spent a ton of time around the Bucks last season, and I've watched from a distance this year. Giannis is unbelievable. But if you took Harden off that Rockets team for those couple months when they were going through the losses and Paul got hurt again and they couldn't find their way, that Rockets team wouldn't be close to where it is right now. And I would say if you took Giannis off the Bucks, while they certainly aren't close to the team they would be, with Budenholzer and the pieces that they do have in place, I think they would be in a better spot than the Rockets would be. But this
so you're flipping
the
argument on its head. Yeah,
right.
You're flipping the point on its head, which Royce made, which is that the fact that all these games are close is just an example of why he's so valuable.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, this is the problem. You can go down all these different avenues, and you eventually end up in this these same cul-de-sacs with these two guys. And so
you know what I was gonna say, Brian, is you know what this I'm a college football guy, you're a college football guy. This feels like the Heisman debate, doesn't it? It's like you got three guys, you know, Paul George is kind of on the fringes, he's the Dwayne Haskins, having a great year. Everybody understands that it's a great year, but he's not gonna win. And then you've got Kyler Murray, who is James Harden, it's like has to score every time he has the ball because he's got these various factors around him. And then you've got like the most complete player that's been sitting out fourth quarters and all this stuff, which is Tua, which is Giannis. So it's like I feel like it's that same debate everybody had for Heisman is now in the NBA. That makes sense in my head because I like college football.
Yes, well, as long as you're going to extend that analogy, you know, the Kyler Murray, a.k.a. James Harden, won it. So
right.
Now, it's funny. So both Kid and Scotty lean Giannis. Now, if Jason Kidd, who practically raised Giannis as a player, didn't vote for him, that would have been surprising. But nonetheless, I respect.
I was going to say the bias there is pretty damn strong.
Number two was Malcolm Brogdon. Number three,
right. So that's it's fair to point out. Although I respect his point. Is that the way that you in the team setting that you need to win in a team setting. And this just goes back to what Andrew and I discovered when we spent a couple of days interviewing people at All-Star Weekend, which is that the players, and I assume this goes to the officiating and just the style of play, the players themselves, there is a player's award. Based on my sampling, I would say that Giannis is in the lead for the Players Award. Because the players seem to really value what Giannis does. And those are the guys that are going up there and dealing with it. They seem to think that there's a little bit of sorcery going on with Harden. But, I mean, should he be penalized for that? I mean, even if we accept that that's true, that he plays an unattractive style, that doesn't mean his mastery at it is any less impressive. So I honestly, guys, I don't know how I'm going to break the tie. I really don't. And I don't remember the last time. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me ask you guys this. Since we all agree that narrative is such a huge part of this award, and Royce, you laid it out as far as people believing that, that Harden is having this incredible season and seems to have had that push for a couple months. If James Harden hadn't won the MVP award last year, do we perceive anything of what's going on right now any differently?
100%. I think that's an extremely fair point. Because just me personally, I feel that way, and it's not fair, it shouldn't matter at all. But the fact that it would be like, well, it feels like it's Harden's turn. You know, I think that's the way that we would kind of perceive it as a voter, is that like, okay, now it Harden's been close, he's been close. This year, it's too much to deny it. He's the MVP, and now I feel like people kind of lean that way about Giannis, is that James Harden is last season's MVP. He's last year's news. And now it's like it's Giannis's turn. And so I think that is absolutely going to come into play.
Yes, I agree. But shouldn't we in the media who have responsibility here not worry about turns? Shouldn't
yes,
we try to evaluate
100%.
It on this season? I don't know.
I think we also shouldn't really care too much about narrative, but we kind of can't help it. I mean, we're human and we like storylines and that stuff matters.
LeBron's listening to this right now, guys, and he's screaming.
I'm sure he
about
is.
The Derrick Rose year and probably several other years, but yeah. That's the one that always stuck out to me because Derrick had an incredible
year. Boy, you want
to
get LeBron heated, start bringing up the 2011 MVP vote.
Absolutely. It was exactly what we're speaking about because Derrick led a Bulls team that hadn't had that much success and played in almost every game and took them to a level which they haven't been back since. And LeBron, when you go back through the numbers and you see the impact he had an incredible year. But it wasn't enough because that narrative was so strong.
Yeah.
So the most difficult MVP vote I think I've ever had was 2004 or 2005, Steve Nash over Shaq, which is still a very controversial vote. It was the first MVP that Steve Nash won. He ended up repeating the next year. I went with Nash because in 2004, I'm pretty sure it was 2003-04, but I should have had it in front of me. But I had never seen the game played the way that the Suns and Nash were playing it that year. I was blown away by the way he changed the game. And Shaq's numbers were awesome. And there are people who will really, really be impassioned to feel that Shaq was robbed that year. I remember at the time Dan Le Batard believed that the race played a role in the vote. I have no idea whether that was true. I did not agree with it then. I don't think I agree with it now. And I think that it was the way the game has changed and the fact that he won it the next year, in my belief, my vote for Nash is vindicated. Of course, I'm biased to want to believe that my vote was right. But regardless of that, I don't want to relitigate that. That was the last, and I was way younger then, really didn't know anything about the game. I was 26 when I was voting, 25, 26. I'd like to think I learned a little bit about the game, and I'm trying to apply what I've learned about the game. And Scottie Pippen has given some impassioned explanation for why he thinks that Giannis should win it. Not against Harden, but just because of the doing in the team concept. I just don't know where I'm going to come down on it, and I don't know what I'm going to do for the tiebreaker. Another thing those guys were talking to me about, this is hits Oklahoma home, Royce, was that Trae Young has been the better rookie than Luka Doncic for the last 2 months. And that award is retired. I mean, not retired, but is settled because Trae Young was not very good in October, November, December. But go back and look at the stats from February 1st onward. Trae Young has been performing better. And there are all kinds of circumstances in here. Luka's been banged up a little bit. Luka's team traded away a bunch of players and has been quasi-tanking, some would argue full-on tanking, whereas the Hawks have sort of been, you know, still playing to win. I am going to vote for Luka Doncic, but Trae Young, this is now a conversation, especially because Trae Young just hit an awesome game winner where he mm-hmm. beat Jimmy Butler off the dribble and floated the ball over Joel Embiid over the weekend. Trae Young, Royce, has been pretty damn good these last 8-10 weeks. Do you think that that really affects the Rookie of the Year vote?
I think he's going to get some votes. And look, it's like a vote I should probably recuse myself from if I do get a ballot, because I do love Trey. I know him, and he's a great guy, and watched him play in high school and all that good stuff. But in terms of a closing argument, like, I guess that's the question, though, Brian, is that should the first month and a half trump the final month and a half? Because look at Luka's...
Well, it's rookie of the year, not rookie of the February, March, and April. It's rookie of the year.
And also not rookie of the October, November, December. So, and Luka was considerably better, but like, look at Luka lately. First of all, the Mavs lost 10 in a row in the month of March, and they just beat the Warriors. But Luka, you know, he's averaging 21.5 in March, but he's shooting 38% from the field, or 38.9% from the field, and 24% from three.
Don't look at the foul line either, because that ain't good either.
Yeah, 62% from the free throw line. And his February was very good. His January was pretty good. I wouldn't say very good.
Well, when did he make those? He had a run. I in my head I thought it was January, but he had a run where he had 3-4 weeks where he was just out of his mind, and he pretty much clinched the award then.
Yeah, I think it was probably more, I don't know, December. He had a pretty good run of. I mean, he's had a lot of 25 to 35 point games. But yeah, I think Luka's going to win it. I think he's going to win it just because he just built up such a lead. I mean, Trae Young has been running from behind on this for quite some time now, and I think that Luka also just kind of with the conversation around the trade and everything else. Since he hit the ground running and Trae Young came out struggling, you know, it's like people have to keep kind of rehashing that trade. Like, hey, by the way, did you know that trade seems fair now? And it's like, yes, we all know. If you're paying attention, it seems like it was a good trade for both sides, and both players can. I can't believe this, everybody. But two players can simultaneously be good, and we don't have to declare a winner in a trade.
But we do in this particular conversation. We do, because it's a Rookie of the Year vote.
So is that how it works, Brian? Is that whoever wins Rookie of the Year wins the trade also?
That's
they get
right.
To hang that award.
That's right. That's right. They both retire. It's over.
Yeah. Guys, the key here today is the key here though is that what Trae Young has done, he's not going to win the Rookie of the Year award, but he silenced the critics, of which there were many, 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 many. And after that start that he had for those first couple months, all those critics grew louder because everybody thought, oh my gosh, that trade just looks terrible. But to his credit, he continued finding ways to get better and feel more comfortable on the floor. So, no, he's not going to win the award, but he's given Atlanta finally some peace to feel excited about, and he's shown that there were a lot of people in the league who thought that he could become the type of player that he's becoming. The difference in watching them, and I'm in this Warriors bubble now, is when you talk to at least all the stars on the Warriors, they really like Trae Young, and Steph Curry has gone out of his way to keep those comparisons down because he wants Trae Young to make a name for himself and not always be compared to him. But they love Luka. Steve Kerr all the way down, Draymond. Those guys think that he will be an absolute superstar in the league for years to come. It's not
well,
to
Luka
say that Trae
is,
Young
you know,
won't either.
Luka's size versus Trae's is a humongous factor.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Regardless of their other tools.
And as we broaden out the conversation, that's the key here. And it speaks to exactly what Royce is saying. When you look at the trade and you look at how their respective years have gone, Luka Doncic is going to win the Rookie of the Year award, but Trae Young has proven that he can be a building block when in the beginning of the year, nobody was sure if that was going to be the case either. And how it plays out from here, we'll see.
So I actually talked to Trae Young today for a story that's coming up on ESPN about the Hawks. And by the way, I asked him if he's thought about the possibility of playing with Ja Morant, because to me, one of the fascinating things is if the Hawks end up with the second pick, do they take Ja Morant? Knowing that he's kind of similar to Trey.
When's the last time that worked, that. B? When's the last time that worked? That, oh yeah, oh, here's Dennis Smith and Luka. Here's, you know, there, here's two point guards who both need
Ricky Rubio and,
to succeed.
Who
Johnny Flynn.
Johnny Flynn, yeah.
Flynn, yeah. Yeah.
Not Steph Curry.
Yeah, well, anyway, he artfully sidestepped it, which he just praised him. But he was telling me that at the beginning of the season, you know, there was all this discussion about the new quote-unquote freedom of movement rules that happened in the NBA. You know, like, oh, my God, they don't let anybody put their hands on anybody anymore, and this isn't the way we played back when I was a kid. And, boy, if the bad boys would kick all these teams' butts because they're not used to it, you know, he's hearing all this freedom of movement stuff, and then he's going out and actually playing in the games and going, I was getting beat up relentlessly. He goes, the physicality of the game was amazing, which is not a surprise. That's what we hear a lot of rookies say. But he just talked about how crazy it was that, you know, he was getting bruised up. He talked about a game where he guarded J.J. Redick. And actually, Lloyd Pierce, their coach, told me they put him on Redick for this exact reason. And he ran around with J.J. Redick, who sometimes gets, you know, Trey was like, sometimes he gets three screens, gets the ball, then swings it, and then goes and runs through two more. And he goes, that experience, like, taught him just how brutal and how hard you have to work and how strong you have to be to play the position. And so he had to really learn the physicality. And then he talked about, look, in November he shot 20% from three-point range, and that was when Luka was taken off. He couldn't hit a shot, and he was just saying that he was so frustrated that it was like a cloud over his whole life. He would wait till the Arena Bowl emptied out, and then he would go Kobe and go back into the bowl and shoot at home games in Atlanta just to try to get – he didn't know how to break out of the slump. And, you know, Lloyd Pierce told him, he's, look, we know you can shoot threes. You know, don't worry about it. Just, you know, work on your defense and your playmaking. But, you know, it was difficult for him. It's not supposed to be an easy transition. And he said what ended up happening was when he started playing teams for a second and third time, and he started learning the personnel, learning how teams were guarding him, he just started lifting. Everything started lifting. And so, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you're not in competition for how well you play your first 2 months or obviously even your first year. You're in competition for how you are over the long term. And that's not saying that, you know, I mean, Luka over the long term has one of the brightest futures of anybody we've seen come in the league in a while. But I think Trae Young's long term is really improved the outlook. And what I'll say about this, whatever you want to say about the Hawks, and, you know, we don't talk about the Hawks on here much, and why would we? They're certainly building. You look at John Collins. Huge jump out of Wake Forest. Huge jump from year one to year two. Huge improvement. You look at Trae Young. For sure. Trae Young. Big improvement from October, November to, you know, February, March. Kevin Huerter. Another first-round pick they had. Picked 19th. Major improvement from October to February. He became a starter, I think, in January, early February. This is how you build a team. This is what you do here. And now they could, you know, they're in position to have the fifth pick. If Dallas doesn't move up, they'd have the sixth pick. They could move up. You know, they could end up with two top six picks in this draft. And the draft is top heavy. That's where you want to be. You don't want to necessarily be at, you know, 12, which is where 12 or 14, where they thought maybe Dallas would have been, maybe even 16 when they made the trade. They could end up with all of those young guys on the improvement with two top six picks. And even if you only hit one of them, now you're talking about John Collins, who has a chance to be an all-star, I think. Trae Young, who I think is on the path to being an all-star. And potentially another top player, maybe two. Maybe Morant or Zion, depending on if they get lucky or not. I think the Hawks are in a somewhat of a decent spot. I mean, Andrew probably thinks we've already talked about the Hawks too much, but
you've talked about a lot. I'm not going to let this slide, though. I've never heard going Kobe as going back on the court to shoot extra shots. That's a new one. But also, Brian, as you're well aware, we did a redraft of this most recent draft class recently, and I wanted to get Royce and Nick's take on where they would pick Luka and Trey if they had the ability to draft these players over again today.
I mean, I think Luka probably goes number one just because of, like, franchise superstar capabilities. I think that Luka Doncic is probably more suited for that. I actually think Ayton would probably go. Is this my personal redraft or what I think it would be?
Your personal redraft. You're,
oh, well.
Isn't that the same thing?
I was going to say Trey.
So here comes Trey Young at number two, baby.
Well, I'm Trey Young at number one.
That's right.
Don't overlook the fact that DeAndre Ayton's had a pretty nice second half himself. He's played pretty well. I don't think Ayton is some bust by any means. He's quietly looked very good.
He would be rookie of the year in a lot of years. Mm-hmm. You know, for probably sure. Half the years he probably would be rookie of the year. So I want to go into Nick's wheelhouse. Yeah, go ahead.
Hold on 1 second. This is the part, and you could flip out the Hawks with any number of teams in the league in how you're trying to build up a roster. And this is what would worry me if I'm Atlanta, because I agree with you. Trey Young looks much better, and Collins and Herter, it gives them a nice supporting cast to start building around. But you need stars to win in the league. And if you're Atlanta, by all accounts, you guys tell me if I'm wrong here, this is a three-player draft as we sit here today, at least at the top. You got Zion, Morant, and Barrett. And after that, maybe one of these guys hits, you don't know. But if you're not in that top three this year, having the sixth pick and the fifth pick, or wherever those picks land, you know, that's a nice chip to have on paper. But once these guys start playing, that's the difference. How about this?
So, in case you forgot, Carmelo Anthony is on the Hawks' books. So, he comes off. They have cap space. They have max cap space this summer. What if they hit, if they get
Kevin
one of the
Durant.
Top two picks?
Sorry.
That's where I was going.
Oh, no.
That's where I was going. Do they get a meeting with Durant?
I don't think so.
I realize that the whole point of Durant leaving the Warriors
is to go to,
I mean, to leave
the Warriors JV team.
He's going to leave the Warriors and forget all the New York stuff. He's going to go to Atlanta.
I'm just saying, don't you think if you're him, you give him a meeting? I know it defeats the purpose. If you're going to leave one of the greatest teams of all time, you're not looking to go join another, you know, team that's assembled perfectly. You're going to look to chart your own course. And New York sort of makes sense on that front for several reasons. But if Atlanta calls, don't you go listen to what they say? Because, can you imagine that? Can you imagine this team we just talked about, and they get a top two pick, and by the way, let's say it's not Durant. Like, what if they call Kawhi?
Yeah, I was going to say, there's other good players out there on max free agency.
Like, I mean, it's not... I mean, and by the way, I'm not trying to convince them to go to Milwaukee. Atlanta, a desirable place for players, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Like, should I shut this conversation down? Am I out of my depth here? Am I crazy?
This is like Philly had a chance last summer. Can we get a meeting with LeBron? And didn't they send... They sent Rich Paul, or they sent somebody else to that meeting. They're like, LeBron can't make it, but,
Here's the ultimate question. That's right. So Philly got a meeting with the agent, which isn't that big of a deal since he represents Ben Simmons. So Denver was begging for a meeting with LeBron last summer. They just wanted to be able to get in the room. They knew he wasn't going to come, but they were just trying to get into the room. Okay. And now, in some alternate universe, think about where Denver's team is right now. They ended up using their cap space in a different way. But just in an alternate universe, think about LeBron on that Denver team. Okay. Like, they wanted to at least present the vision that he would not meet with them. He would not give them 10 minutes. And the reason it was amazing is because he has a relationship with the owner, Josh Kroenke. and several times had been a guest slash used Stan Kroenke's mega yacht, in the Mediterranean, or maybe it was in the Caribbean. But like LeBron, well, it's one of the things that LeBron loves to do is take a yacht. It's become a big thing with NBA players in recent years. Go get a mega yacht, take it out in the Mediterranean, take it out in the Caribbean, chill for a week, whatever. If you let LeBron use your yacht multiple times and you can't get a meeting with him, A, does LeBron call back and ask to use the yacht this summer? I say yes. B,
he's LeBron, I'm sure he will.
B, do you let him come back on the yacht when he wouldn't give you, literally the time of day?
Mm. LeBron's going to call, and if I had any, can I say balls on this podcast? Or is that going to get bleeped? Okay, if the Kroenkes have balls, they're like, bye, LeBron.
Who is this?
We're not going to get used anymore.
Who is this?
Come on now.
Yeah. That's a story I would love to know whether it happens or not.
Is that not tampering?
I'm just saying. Tampering. What a laughable concept. I'm just saying, if Atlanta gets lottery luck.
The tampering?
If Atlanta gets lottery luck, they have max cap space. That's all I'm going to say. Andrew, when was the last time you bought razors at the drugstore?
Just the other day. It cost $1,000 or just a lot. I don't know.
You had to put on a payment plan. You are a man that has fun with facial hair at times. You are a man that enjoys a good razor that is versatile yet powerful, right? I mean, you bit of a connoisseur of it.
Yeah, I like a powerful razor.
Who doesn't, quite frankly? Well, you should forget about going to the drugstore, and you should go with one of the great options for men's upkeep, hygiene, however you want to say, taking care of yourself, and go with Dollar Shave Club, because they have everything you need to get ready, no matter what you're getting ready for. Now, you can interpret that statement any way you want it, all right? But they've got you covered from head to toe. And again, you can interpret that however you want it. Your hair, your skin, your face, anywhere else, you name it, they have it. And they've got a new program where you automatically get stocked up on their products that you use, and they've got a whole line of them. For example, they've got some very good Dollar Shave Club toothpaste, which can be set up to be automatically sent to you. So you never have to worry about running out of toothpaste, much less razors, which you will pay much less for than if you bought them off the rack yourself. Actually, they put them in a box with the plastic protection on it because they're so preposterously priced that they consider them something that could be stolen. Plus, Andrew, I don't think I qualify for this, but you would qualify for the handsome discount because the more you buy, the more you save. And if you haven't tried Dollar Shave Club, you can check out all of their products with one of the starter sets that they have for just $5, like their oral care kit. After that, the restock box ships the regular size products at the regular price. So, Andrew, what are you waiting for? Don't buy your razors at the grocery store or the drugstore anymore. Go to Dollar Shave Club. Get your starter set for $5 at dollarshaveclub.com/hoop. That's dollarshaveclub.com/hoop. To get to Nick's home area, something, nothing, or everything, to use a concept from The Jump, the last 2 weeks of the Warriors. They go on a road trip and slap around all the relevant teams in the Midwest. Just kick their butt. Go into Houston, end their win streak. What else do they do on that trip, Nick?
Smash the Thunder.
Yeah, they crushed the Thunder, mm-hmm. And then, God, where was that? Oh, they lost to San Antonio. They lost to San Antonio, and they beat. Man, it's all blurring together.
All right. Anyway,
they were three and one.
They had a pretty good road trip. They come back and blech, including getting their butts kicked in on their home court the other night by Dallas, who had been terrible. What was it, 38? How much was the
35.
Spread?
35.
What do we make of this? Something, nothing, or everything?
Nothing. Zero. Okay. This team, guys, just wants the regular season to end. They want the playoffs to start. They want to stay healthy. I have only been around them this season, day to day. But I've, in listening to Kerr and Draymond and Kevin and Steph, all these guys, I just think they are mentally exhausted. I think they're tired. I still believe that they're going to win the title this year. I don't think there's any team, East or West, that can take 4 of 7 from them if they do stay healthy. But after all the winning and after all the titles, Kerr has said it many times, there's a reason that a lot of teams don't do this. There's a reason that you don't see this happening. I thought it was very interesting. It got lost in the shuffle because, you know, it's a Pistons game on a Sunday night in the college, and the NCAA tournament's going on. Several players in Kerr were very reflective because it was the sixth straight year that the Warriors have won at least 50 games. And Kerr really came to the defense of his players because he's like, people don't understand the grind this is. He's like, we had nothing in that Dallas game. There was nothing there. No juice, no whatever word you want to use. And they followed that up and they found a way to win. And I still think they can turn a switch once the playoffs start and get rolling again. But this group, and it's not just whatever happened with Kevin and Draymond. They're long past that. Where is Kevin going to go this summer? Nobody knows for sure. But I think while that's hovered over the organization, the locker room, I don't think that's something that they're worrying about day to day. Kevin's going to decide whatever he decides. But they are so tired after all these years of playing at this high of a level. And once and if in they do win again this year, I think you're going to see a lot of emotion because this has been a very difficult process for them to try.
It might be
an
emotion because
night.
It might be Durant walking out the door too.
Right, and they know that could be it. And if it is it, you know, it is what it is. But the reality is, I'd be shocked if Kerr doesn't come out and Steph and those guys and say, hey, this one was the most difficult. Because there's just not that level of, all right, let's go prove everybody wrong tonight. There's a reason why they're getting blown out the way they are at home on the road sometimes, because there are nights that they just don't have it and they just are punting for later. And so that's why I don't think anything that we've seen in these last couple weeks is worth any kind of huge discussion, because it's put up or shut up time in the playoffs. They know it. And I think they'll be ready for it.
Nick, so Royce, let me ask you I want to ask Nick something. So, like, obviously the Warriors want to win the title, and they obviously want Kevin Durant to come back, right? Do you think that there would be a sense of relief if he didn't? It'd be like, okay, because, like, everything you just laid out there, it just gets recycled again, doesn't it?
Yeah. I would say that after all this time, this group, the Draymond, Steph, Clay, Kevin, and Steve Kerr and his staff, they know that they're playing for history. So while, yeah, I could see a scenario where it's like, okay, you know, Kevin is a different guy. We did everything we could to make him feel comfortable. He did everything he could for us. We won 3 straight titles. He potentially could win 3 straight finals MVPs. I could see that side, Royce, for sure, where everybody went, ah. But in the next breath, and I would include Kevin in this because I've talked to him about it, all these guys understand, the core guys, the Hall of Fame guys, they know that they're in this stretch right now that is so rarefied in the history of the game that they know they can keep it going if they want to. I mean, if Kevin stays even for one more year and they go into the Chase Center and he's closer to his place in San Francisco and they talk through some of the stuff that went on this season, there's no reason to believe that they can't win again next year and be renewed in the quest. But it's a question that will hover until he makes his decision.
Being around them, have you heard any of them complaining about, because almost all of them live in the East Bay.
Oh yeah.
And not all of them want to. Yeah. So right now their practice facility is in downtown And the arena's down
Oakland. Yeah.
Yeah, downtown Oakland, sorry. And the arena's down the highway, depending on traffic, 10, 15 minutes, maybe a half hour. But they all, you know, live in the East Bay. It's where they've been their whole careers. And, you know, just,
except for Kevin.
Cheap over there. Except for Kevin, that's right. So let me ask you this. Like, I have heard stories about how these guys are not thrilled. And their practice facility is going to be at the new arena, too, in downtown San Francisco. That they're not thrilled. And that they're kind of brainstorming ideas about how they're going to have the players deal with the bridge. Because the bridge is brutal. Part of the reason why you live in the East Bay, unless you're Kevin Durant, I don't know if he has a helicopter or something. Part of the reason you live in the East Bay is so that you don't have to deal with the Bay Bridge and the traffic. And that they may charter a boat for them to like carry them over. Have you heard anything about that, Nick, about what the guys are going to do next year? Is anybody complaining about having
to
move?
They need to call Josh Kroenke or whatever and borrow the yacht.
Right, no kidding.
Get the yacht over here, right? Yeah, our friend Mark Spears from The Undefeated, he's discussed this and written about it a little bit. But, yeah, I think players are trying to figure out how they're going to navigate the move. And I talked to Rick Welts about it earlier this season.
Team president.
The Warriors president. And Rick was like, we're trying to figure out it as well. They have a list of all their employees, not just the players, all their employees, where they live, and what will make it the easiest for them in the transition. Because people have to understand, you laid it out there, everything is in Oakland right now. And everything, practice facility, offices, arena, everything's going to be in San Francisco in September.
When you go to cover a game in Oakland, do you stay in Oakland or do you stay in San Francisco?
I stay in Oakland.
Even though teams stay
in San Francisco.
Right, most of them do. I think pretty much they all do. Yeah, Nick, before you move there, did you stay in San Francisco or did you stay in Oakland?
I stayed in Oakland for that playoff series last year when I was covering the Pelicans. But yeah, usually I stay in San Francisco.
Andrew, you've been there for many finals now. Where do you stay? Do you stay
San Francisco? Don't ask.
Yeah. It's interesting. So, Roy, something, nothing, or everything, the fact that the Oklahoma City Thunder have the worst offense in the league since the All-Star break.
I think it's something. I don't think it's everything. Because let's also not forget that the conversation around the Thunder to begin the season was also about how they were a historically bad shooting team, and everybody kind of kept saying that that's going to come around. And that's really been the case in this situation again, is they've gone from a very, very good shooting team. I think that they had risen up into the top 10 overall or close to in three-point shooting. And for like basically a month and a half stretch, two-month stretch, were one of the three or four best three-point shooters in the NBA. Now, they were out shooting themselves because they are not that good of a shooting team. I think that they've come crashing down hard. A lot of that's had to do with the fact that Paul George has cooled off, dealing with some shoulder issues. Also just isn't making absurd shots like he was for a good period of time. But there's nothing to say that they can't rediscover it. Now, the reason to me, Brian, it's something is because it's cost them seeding. They've gone from a pretty sure bet to be the 3 seed to now potentially even the 8 seed. And because of of their shooting struggles. But I think it's also why I think that the Thunder are very internally confident now outside of playing the Warriors in the opening round because of the death sentence potentially.
Imagine that, Nick? Can you imagine the Warriors Thunder in the first round? Also, by the way, I wouldn't be signing up for the Spurs either. I mean, I would still pick the Warriors in both series, but
yeah.
I'm not in love with that.
There's nobody's got check that box and move on. I mean, there's seriously not a single series I think that feels that way. To me, the Clippers feel like the most vulnerable playoff team, but they're just so solid and they just keep playing well.
You'd certainly rather play the Clippers than the Thunder.
I think so.
I think that's a fair thing to say.
And I were sitting there the other night. We were sitting in Oklahoma City and I just couldn't believe how much Klay Thompson wrapped up Russ.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't do anything. and granted that, you know, that may be
that
an outlier.
That was Westbrook's worst game, I think, maybe of his career, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, he was just awful. That was the next question game, right?
What do you think about getting the technical? He got the technical foul and everything.
Next question. But, you know, That the Warriors playing the Thunder in any round would be awesome, but in the first round, oh my, all the subplots would come pouring in early on. I mean, that would be that would be a lot of fun.
That feels like a lot of fun. I can't decide if that's best case scenario for the Warriors to kind of get their minds right, or if that's worst case scenario. Because I would think best. See, if they got down in the series, then it'd be like everything's crashing down on them, and like the weight of the world, and maybe that would bring the best out of them. But I do think that it would focus them in, right?
No doubt. And I agree with you. Like, look, if somehow the Thunder won two of those first three, game four in OKC, which they would have to even it up, go back to Oakland.
That might literally be the best atmosphere in NBA history.
That'd be great. I don't see that. After watching that game, and Kevin, of course, didn't even play that night, they are that much better than where OKC is at, even if it was such an incredibly off night for Russ. I mean, they just have a mental edge over that group, and especially with the performance they put on without Kevin.
If you listen to our podcast here at the Hoop Collective, we know you love the NBA. And if you want even more NBA analysis, you know you're going to want to check out the Low Post podcast with Zach Lowe. I know that you know about this. I know that you're a fan of this podcast and Zach's podcast. But in the strange realm of the world that you may not have listened to the Low Post and don't know about the genius of Zach Lowe and the quality guest he lines up, you owe it to yourself to go check out the Low Post podcast, Zach Lowe, the Zach Lowe Post podcast. Get it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your favorite podcast. Royce, was there any interesting action with Durant coming back to Oklahoma City the other night for Nick Collison's jersey retirement?
Not really. No.
Off night?
Yeah, everybody tried to really kind of handle that with his... In the most non-controversial way that they possibly could, and that starts with the Thunder. Really, the Thunder just really kind of wanted to make sure that they hashed out a lot of different options about the way that they wanted the Collison ceremony to go, and they considered, should they have all the players that wanted to come back, should they be part of the ceremony on the court, because it wasn't like a lot of guys, it wasn't like it was 30 former teammates, it was only Cole Aldrich was there, Anthony Morrow, Brent Barry was there. Steve Novak was there. I'm trying to remember. I think Perry
Brent
Jones.
Barry. That's old Thunder school great. Sonics.
Him and Nick are really good. Him and Nick are really good friends. It wasn't like there was like this long list of players. So it would have made sense to have had them on the court. The reason that they didn't want to do it is because Kevin was there, and that would have made things awkward. I don't think that Kevin Durant would have been booed. I think it would have worked out. Just the general mood and feel. I think everybody would have they never showed him on the big screen. Nobody even really knew that he was up in a suite. You barely even saw him at the arena.
If you watched the TV broadcast.
Yeah, they were able to find him one time there. But, yeah. If you want to put on your tinfoil hat, I actually wondered to myself a little bit that, like, because it seemed to me, Nick, that Durant was probably able to play in that OKC game, right? Like, he practiced the day before.
Oh, yeah, he could, like, for sure.
It seemed like the general thinking was that he was going to play in that game. And part of me just wondered, now this is just me just wondering, if Kevin was like, I don't want to play in that game. I don't want to go head-to-head with Russ. I don't want to get into some scrap. I don't want things to get weird. And two nights later, I'm going back to OKC to hang out and eat dinner and party with these guys. That would be uncomfortable, so I'm just going to sit this one out.
I did not have that thought, but I also didn't put my tinfoil hat on him in Oklahoma, so I
couldn't help but wonder it.
Yeah, I think they, and it's the same thing, it's funny because Steph wanted to play in Toronto, and this goes back a few months, but the Warriors, the medical staff, they held him out. He had a groin injury. They said, it's just not worth it. We have to be right for the postseason. That's all that matters. And as far as
they lost
goes,
close, and they almost could declare it a win because they lost close.
Exactly. And Kevin was incredible in that game. And then, fast forward a few months, the Warriors come in and just dominate. So could he have played? Sure. But I never thought that it was because he didn't want to get into it again, in Oklahoma City. But Royce, while we're on the topic of that game in the mix of, the Collison conversation. That is the quietest atmosphere that night. And it was because, certainly, that it was a blowout. But I don't know whether it was because Kevin didn't play or it was just it wasn't close early. That was so quiet in there. There were a lot of Warriors fans, too. It was that shocked me.
Yeah, there were. I mean, the Warriors sucked the energy out of the building early on. You know, they were up, it felt like, double digits within the first couple minutes, and they just kind of kept it there. The Thunder really never made – I think the Thunder cut it to, like, six at one point in the second quarter, but it never really became a game. And you're right, though, Nick. I think that the minute that Durant wasn't playing, it just kind of sucked the energy out of the building a little bit of, like, well, you know. And I would say this. It's not like – you know, there's still some animosity there, I think, for Thunder fans and Kevin Durant, but it's not like, you know, this – raucous booing, heckling type of thing. It's more of just like a we want to beat you type deal is I think how a lot of people approach that game. So that element was definitely missing.
So Royce, if the Thunder get eliminated in the first round of the playoffs, let's say they get the Warriors, let's say they lose, with a what's their payroll, $140 million?
Yeah, $61 million in tax or something.
What is the fallout from that?
I don't know that there's any.
I mean, Billy Donovan was recently extended, right?
Yeah, I don't think Billy Donovan's going anywhere. I think that they view Billy Donovan as kind of part of their core in a lot of different ways. I don't think that really a lot of the issues that even the Thunder have are at the feet of Billy Donovan. I mean, for instance, like they lost to the Toronto Raptors in overtime and they missed 14 free throws. I mean, like a lot of what kind of plagues this Thunder team from being a lot better are just these self-inflicted wounds that, I mean, I don't see how you could possibly point the finger at Billy Donovan over some of them. Now, that's not to say that he's without blame. I mean, he's the head coach. He's going to get some of that. But I don't think any significant changes, like core changes, would be coming. But I do think that, you know, a player like Dennis Schroeder is going to be somebody that they might look to move in the offseason. You know, they kind of traded for him to view him as a retradable asset. I don't think that he's going to like play out his contract in OKC. I think another
he's had a couple of moments this year, but
yeah, I mean, he like the other night in Toronto, I think he had 26. He really is kind of their litmus test. He's kind of their barometer. Like when he plays really really well, the Thunder are pretty good.
Well, they're desperate for offense right now. Yeah. So like when he helps them offensively, it makes a humongous difference because, frankly, Westbrook just, you know, I'm not saying he's having a bad year, but his offense has just not been there. So you get
just inconsistent. You know, yeah, he's just, and one of the, to me, the obvious things, because Westbrook has shot the ball a lot better over the last like month and a half, Brian, but it's become pretty obvious to me that the Thunder are at their best when Paul George is their best player, not when Russell Westbrook is their best player, because Westbrook has been their best player for the last like month and a half. And that's when you ride the wave of Westbrook, right? That's when it goes, because he himself is so inconsistent, not just game to game, but possession by possession. And so you ride the roller coaster of Westbrook up and down. And Paul George is so much steadier. So when Paul George is your focal point and your best player, that's when the Thunder are at their best. I mean, they were winning games with Russell Westbrook shooting 38% because Westbrook does so many other things. He rebounds, he passes, he does all these other things that he can kind of make up for not being quote-unquote the best player. But to the original question, I think another thing they might just to keep an eye on is Andre Roberson. He's in a contract year next year. You know, he's probably not going to play at all this season. If the Thunder go deep in the playoffs, he might come back for a playoff series in like the second round or maybe the Western Conference.
Well, I didn't even know that was an option. Is he he's not really doing anything with him.
He's not really doing anything, but I think that they're keeping that option on the table. You're not going to see him in the regular season. You almost assuredly wouldn't see him in the first round. So you might see him if they go deep. You know, they could use him in a series against, you know, for a couple minutes against James Harden or Klay Thompson or something like that. But Terrence Ferguson has been really good for them. And I think he's kind of shown another element of what they could have at that shooting guard position. He's only 20 years old on a rookie scale deal. He's a really good defender and he's kind of that elusive 3-and-D guy that they've been looking for years and years. And it makes Roberson, I think, a lot more expendable.
You mentioned that The Thunder at their best when Paul George is their best player. Is Westbrook okay in that scenario, knowing that he's the number two guy now, kind of moving forward?
I think so. I think Westbrook has always been a lot more comfortable with that idea than people give him credit for. Now, when Durant left, Westbrook threw the, you know, threw the franchise on his shoulders, and it was like he relished the idea of it being all his. There's no doubt, you know, the now I do what I want stuff. I mean, like, Westbrook was all
that was
in
an all-time moment right there.
Right. So, you know, did you one of the funny things about Westbrook is it's like part of his pregame routine, Brian, that he'll sit there at his locker and like a certain, you know, he is a creature of habit, and he will sing along to that song at his locker like before every single game.
It's every just, game.
It cracks me up. Like, he'll be sitting there.
So let me ask you this. More ridiculous Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant troll moment. The now I do what I want IG post. I think it was on IG. Or him wearing the photographer's vest to the first game.
Photographer's vest one is the better one because there was so much nuance to that one that people it was so much not what people thought it was. People thought it was Westbrook making fun of Durant's hobby, right? Like, that's not what it was. Like, what it was is, so Kevin Durant went, I think I wrote this in my story that night, is that, and this is just based on people that know Westbrook, and it's their perception of what Westbrook was intending. Westbrook has never confirmed this. Westbrook would never say what he really
meant. Next question.
Right.
Don't aggregate.
But please do not. But I already wrote this anyway. This is in my post-game story from that night. But what it really was is, so like when the Warriors first started their recruitment of Kevin Durant was at that Super Bowl. The Thunder stayed overnight, or the Thunder didn't stay overnight, but Durant stayed overnight in San Francisco and went to the Super Bowl. And he was like a photographer for the Players Tribune that night. And he wore a photographer's vest and everything else. But he'd spent a lot of that weekend hanging out with the Warriors. And that really irked Westbrook. Like, Westbrook knew about it. He was bothered by it. And so to the people that know Westbrook, their view of him wearing that photographer's vest was him to say, like, I know when they got to you and I'm wearing the vest here. It wasn't to make fun of Durant.
Yeah, but it was also making fun of Durant.
Oh, it was. Yeah, I mean, it was to troll him, no doubt about it.
All right. Well, we will see where the Thunder are. I think it's going to be one of the fascinating things what happens with that team the rest of the way. We are out of time. So thank you to Nick in Memphis. Getting barbecue tonight, Nick?
I'm getting barbecue in 10 minutes. as soon as we hang up from this. Oh, yeah.
Get the nachos. Get those nachos.
I don't know if I can. I can do it by myself. I wish you were here, buddy. Because
man, I would crush those nachos. I love
them. There's a place in Memphis that claims to have 100-year-old grease that they make their burgers in.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Just down
a little in your hair.
Nobody's eating barbecue in. Well, there's probably hipsters eating barbecue in Portland, but
yeah,
out of a school bus or something.
You just eat coffee beans for dinner, just like coffee cake, coffee beans.
Right. They have off the record ale in the press room after the game. Yeah, thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Thank you to Andrew Hahn, the producer, and Kyrie spinning the dials in Bristol. And we will talk to you later in the week.